This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Good morning. My guest today is Marco Kipa. Marco is an attorney with the law firm of Shepherd, Mullen, Richter, and Hampton, LLP, here in Washington, D.C. Marco is a member of Shepherd, Mullen's aerospace and defense team. Marco, welcome.
Good morning, Roger. Good to see you.
Hey, Marco, why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice and Shepherd Mullen's aerospace and defense team.
Sure, Roger. I'm a associate in the Washington, D.C. office of Shepherd Mullen, and my practice focuses on bid protests as well as mergers and acquisitions. I frequently deal with protests before government agencies, the Government Accountability Office, as well as the Court of Federal Claims. And as you mentioned, I'm a member of the Aerospace and Defense Task Force, and in that capacity, I handle mergers and acquisitions for government contractors.
Well, and that is our topic for today. Today we're going to talk about mergers, the outlook for mergers and acquisitions this year, 2011. We'll go through some of the common due diligence issues that government contractors need to think about with regard to mergers and acquisitions. But first, let's just start with the outlook and where the market is right now. Marco, what are your impressions of what's going on out there?
Well, as background, there was a lull in the volume of deals in 2008 and 2009.
I think understandably, right?
Right.
Given
right.
the economic environment.
But what we saw was a rebound in 2010. There was a 25% increase in the volume of deals over 2009. And if you look at each quarter in 2010 and compare it to each quarter of 2009, there was a corresponding increase in each quarter.
So are we seeing that momentum, maintain itself during 2011? Or
yes, we believe so. Our corporate team has looked at the 2010 numbers. They've looked at the or considered the fiscal environment, the capital markets, as well as a series of regulatory changes, which we will discuss later in the program. And
you sound like the host there. Go ahead. Go. Okay.
And we expect an increase in the volume of deals to continue in 2011.
Well, what do you think? What is driving that increase from your perspective? What are the factors that are contributing to, this uptick? To me, part of it is the economy's gotten better. I think part of it might be there's a lot of corporations sitting on money right now, and they're trying to figure out what to do with it. But what do you think?
Right. Those are all factors that are leading to the increase. And I also think that it's the consolidation of industries, the tightening of the budgets, for instance, focus contractors to seek, or there's an increased importance in the opportunities, and they go out and select contractors that are already involved in those areas and acquire those contractors to get a leg up in a particular segment of the industry.
So you think, is it fair to say, I'm going to sort of translate that. It seems
sure.
to me that with federal dollars, contract dollars sort of either flat or decreasing, depending on who you talk to, but not growing for most programs. Some programs there are growth opportunities. But so from that perspective, one of the strategies that companies are increasingly taking a look at in terms of growth is to acquire somebody else who's got a niche capability that's in a narrow growth band in the federal marketplace.
Exactly.
And where do you see most of that action? What sectors are sort of leading that?
We do see it in the aerospace and defense field.
Okay, and what type of deals are we talking about?
We're talking about cybersecurity. We're talking about national defense. Things of that nature.
Okay, and with regard to when a company is taking a look at where to go and what to do, you know, what factors in terms of in the due diligence process? And first, I think, why don't you just for our listeners explain what due diligence is from the perspective of a company acquiring another company?
Sure. A due diligence is when a company is looking to acquire another company and they're gauging whether or not they want to acquire that particular company. And what that involves is looking at the corporate documentation, the government contracts documentation, labor and employment issues, human resources, tax issues, and the company essentially creates a data room for the acquiring company to look at to make an assessment as to whether or not the company wants to acquire the company.
I mean, really what we're talking about here is this: if you're acquiring somebody, to put it in basic terms, you've got to understand, you know, what assets and what liabilities you're going to assume, whether it's legal liabilities, and that's where you guys come in, right?
Exactly. We need to make an assessment as to whether the liabilities or the buyer is comfortable assuming the liabilities that the company has.
And in the government contracts context, you know, what things do you start looking at? Are you guys, I assume you got some sort of checklist you guys use or whatever?
Yes, yeah. We typically create a due diligence checklist, and we request a series of documents from the company or the target. And those documents range from government contracts, subcontracts, teaming agreements, articles of incorporation, things of that nature.
And what sort of things are you, when you're reviewing those documents, what are you looking for in terms of, you know, I assume you're trying to identify potential risk for
That's
the acquirer
correct.
If you are the acquirer?
Yes.
And on the flip side, what, you know, if you're advising somebody who's being acquired, you know, are you preparing, helping pull those documents together and reviewing them as well for sake of full disclosure to that company?
Exactly. We're aware of the general documentation that the acquirer will be asking for. So we prepare the documentation in advance of the deal proceeding to the latter stages. And what that entails is you're essentially getting your ducks in a row. You want to be able to have the documentation ready in the data room so when the acquirer does request it, it's already in one consolidated data room.
Just can start talking a little bit about some of these, you know, common due diligence issues. And I've sort of got a checklist for this interview,
sure.
I guess. And first of all, you know, does the contract type and the risks associated with it make a difference?
It does. Yes. For instance, if you're looking at a firm fixed price contract, the risk is primarily on the contractor. If the contractor can perform at a level below the firm fixed price, that's to its benefit. The risk there is if the contractor cannot perform at the firm fixed price, it is then responsible for the cost overruns. And this is in comparison to a cost reimbursement contract. In that situation, the contractor is reimbursed for reasonable, allocable, and allowable costs, and the risks there are different than they are in the firm fixed price context.
Right. I think that's obviously cost reimbursement is a situation where the government's assumed more of a risk.
Yes, right. That's correct.
So when you're looking at, you know, this is kind of interesting. So when you're looking at a firm fixed price contract, for example, and you're looking at the terms, are you also, if you are, you know, advising the acquirer, you know, asking for full disclosure of any kind of, like, whether somebody's got a cure notice or things like that?
Yes, we look for that. For instance, things such as termination for defaults, cure notices, those are things that raise red flags. In addition, terminations for convenience can sometimes be indicative of contract performance. Usually they're not. It's just the government terminating the contract for its convenience. But if there's a series of them in a particular area, or if the company notifies us, well, this termination for convenience was actually as a result of a settlement, you'd want to dig a little bit deeper in that area.
Yeah, to see what, you know, what drove that settlement and what sort of precipitated, I get the
exactly,
word right,
the
whole situation.
Leading, the events leading up to the termination for convenience.
On the flip side, just the, you know, with regard to cost reimbursement contracts, what are you really looking for there? I mean, the risks are you looking at, their accounting systems, make sure they're, whether or not there have been audit results? Do you look at those kind of things?
Yes, we do. We also work frequently with consultants as well as accountants, and they look to see whether or not the costs are indeed allocable, reasonable, and allowable. And in that situation, we also look for DCAA audits and correspondence from DCAA indicating that we're going to be auditing your company, and here are the issues that we're going to be looking at. So the audits are particularly important, but the correspondence also sheds light on what could be further down the road.
That's really good stuff, Marco, and we're going to continue down my checklist when we come back, but right now we have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Marco Kipa from Shepherd Mullen, and we're talking about mergers and acquisitions and due diligence issues. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
U.S. agents are on the hunt around the world for Osama bin Laden's associates.
The first step is identification of the individual.
The second step?
What country are they located in?
Fred Burton, Vice President of Intelligence at Stratfor. Mullah Omar, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Anwar al-Awlaki are at the top of the list. And Burton says if any of them are in Pakistan...
Well, that's going to pose a unique problem at this time.
The problem is they may escape before the U.S. and Pakistan repair their frayed relationship. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where AirInc comes in. At the aircrew's request, AirInc texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
If sitting at a desk, working at a computer, or drinking coffee was a good workout, most of us would be in awesome shape. Unfortunately, they aren't. But that doesn't mean if you're behind a desk, you can't go move around some. Kaiser Permanente suggests organizing a lunchtime walking group. Nothing revolutionary, just a group of coworkers that walk every day at lunch. It doesn't matter where. What matters is the walking. Just 30 minutes a day. Studies show that employees who move around and get exercise feel less stressed, lose weight, and lower their risk for chronic conditions. When employers choose Kaiser Permanente, the walking group is just one of the many ideas and tools that we provide to help employees stay healthier and more productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
tradition never graduates. So make plans with family and friends to spend fall Saturdays in Annapolis with Navy football. Order your season tickets today. Join us at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium for a game day atmosphere like no other. The best way to ensure tickets to all our games, including Delaware and Air Force, is to become a season ticket holder. Get the best seats now by calling 1-800-US-4-NAVY or by logging on to NavySports.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Facero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Marco Kipa. Marco is an attorney with the law firm Shepherd Mullen, Richter and Hampton. That's a long name. And we're talking about mergers and acquisitions and due diligence issues. And when we took our break, we were talking about contract type and the things you look at in that area. And Marco, what are some of the other things that when you're looking and reviewing contracts? You know, we talked a little bit about type, fixed price versus cost reimbursement. What are the things that, you know, that a buyer wants to be aware of with regard to the contract?
Well, one of the things is the period of performance as well as the option periods. Typically, contracts have a 1 year or a 5 year, for instance, period of performance. And then the years after that are not guaranteed. They're essentially called option periods. And there are certain procedures or rules that the government needs to follow in order to exercise an option. It's typically referred to as the mirror image rule. The government needs to exercise the option in accordance with the terms of the contract. So if you're looking at a contract for a 10-year period, but only the first 5 years are included in the base period, you need to consider the risks that the options will not be exercised in the latter years, and perhaps the contract value will not be as great as the total contemplated value set forth in the contract.
Right, and that is sort of for purposes of trying to figure out the value of that agreement that a buyer is going to be potentially assuming.
Yes.
One
of the other things you look at in connection with the contracts is the basis of award. For instance, was it awarded on a full and open competition? Was it a sole source award? Was it in any way restricted, a small business set aside? Those are considerations that will go to whether or not the contract, for instance, will be extended, or whether or not in a recompete situation you will actually be the only one who's bidding on the contract,
right,
or whether or not there'll be other competitors coming in. And in that situation, the award is not necessarily guaranteed.
Right. I would assume, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, that, you know, something that somebody's got that's sole source would seem to be an indication that's something that's of good value to the acquirer, or...
It is, but at the same time, with sole source awards, the government is required to take steps to promote full and open competition. So if you run into a situation where a contract has been awarded on a sole source basis for many years in a row, you may want to inquire as to what the government or what the contractor knows about what the government is doing to compete the requirements through full and open competition.
Okay, well, you got anything more on the contract type?
No.
Okay.
No,
see,
you've covered it.
Okay. So, see, you know, and as Marco and I have discussed, I've got my due diligence checklist, and we're going to go down through this thing throughout the show. And next, GSA schedule contracts. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you guys would be looking at, or what, you know, companies should be concerned about if they're going to acquire somebody who does have a GSA schedule?
Sure. As we know, prior to entering into a GSA schedule contract, the parties engage in negotiations to set the basis of the award or the tracking customer, and we look to see what the GSA schedule identifies as the tracking customer and to ensure that the company has indeed complied with those requirements. And one of the things we look at there is the policies and procedures that the company has in place to ensure that it is complying with the tracking customer.
Okay, so that, and then that's really, is that you do look beyond just here's what the contract says, but does the company have the infrastructure in place to ensure compliance with that price reduction clause?
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Would you do the same sort of thing with regard to, like, you know, because it's always, you know, Trade Agreements Act has been an issue with GSA schedules in the past?
Exactly, Trade Agreements Act, export controls. We look at all of the policies and procedures that the company has in place, and depending on how robust those policies and procedures are, it provides additional comfort to the acquirer that perhaps the risks are minimized here, that a violation of those particular rules has occurred.
And would you, for service contractors, do you, you know, what do you look at with regard to the labor categories? So, you know, you could have two companies, one, you know, both on GSA schedule, and one's got one set of labor categories, somebody's else. Do you map those, or what do you do?
We do, exactly. We look to see what the labor categories are being offered under the orders, for instance, the education or experience requirements. And then we match those up to what the contract requires. And at times, you look to see, are those individuals meeting the requirements of the contract? And we also, in these situations, in the merger agreement itself or the stock purchase agreement, we look to get representations and warranties and connections with some of these issues. So the due diligence does provide us with a level of comfort, but then we also seek protection in the actual acquisition agreement itself.
Right. And I know one thing that GSA has been doing for years is, you know, it's, you know, they have their IG audits annually, you know, but that there's only about, you know, 75 to 100 of those a year. But then, you know, GSA, their contracting folks do a report card. Does that report card play any part when you're taking a look at a company who has a GSA schedule?
Yes, it does. And that report card is particularly useful for, again, obtaining an additional level of comfort or minimizing the risk during the acquisition. And what GSA does is GSA gives a rating in connection with, for instance, is the contractor complying with the basis of award. And the rating ranges anywhere from exceptional to very good, marginal, satisfactory. And your risk assessment will be gauged based on the
Right. I think they ask all kinds of questions, right? They ask about the industrial funding fee,
That's correct. You
track and report that, which is an obligation of the contract. So I think they have about 30 questions or something like that?
Yeah, it spans a page or a page and a half of single-space questions.
Yeah, and the way that works, you know, is that GSA has industrial operations analysts, and they actually go out, and they're field folks, and they actually go out and visit the contractors on a regular basis. It's a regular rotation where they'll go out and take a look and actually sit down with the contractor, look at their systems, see, you know, if they've got some, you know, compliance programs in place for the price reduction clause, and that turns into this report. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that's something that somebody doing their due diligence ought to definitely take a look at.
Yes, yeah, and it's all geared toward, as we know, to ensuring that the company is complying with the price reduction clause.
Yeah. So next issue, let's go down my checklist for today, and that is one that's you know, I think there's been some recent changes that you might want to discuss, and that's small business contractors
and
the acquisition, because it seems to me a lot of what goes on, companies either see somebody has a particular niche and they're a small business in a particular, and they need that bigger company needs that, and they acquire that. What does that mean for their size status? Just a host of other issues.
Sure. As with some of the other issues we'll be discussing, there have been regulatory changes in the last several years. And as you identified, as we discussed in connection with the M&A outlook, a contractor will be looking to acquire another company who perhaps has a leg up in a particular field. At times, those companies are small businesses. And in connection with acquiring a small business, you do need to look at an additional layer of risk assessment to ascertain whether or not the company that you're acquiring will retain its small business status. And in 2007, or prior to 2007, a company was considered to be small for the life of the contract, regardless of whether it was acquired by a large business after award. Those rules changed in 2007, and within 30 days of the acquisition closing, or within 30 days of the novation agreement being exercised through modification in the contract, the small business is required to recertify its size status. And what happens at that point is the contracting officer retains the discretion whether to terminate the contract. So there is a risk if you're acquiring a small business that the contracting officer may decide to end the contract. On the other hand, the contracting officer can continue the performance of the contract. However, it cannot claim small business credits. So if you're looking at an IDIQ contract, a multiple award contract, in that situation, if there are many companies, three of them are small businesses, and your company happens to become large, the contracting officer may say, well, I need my small business credits here.
Right, absolutely.
And at that point, you need to assess the risk of the contracting officer terminating the contract.
And have you seen, you know, have you seen that happen, you know, with this new rule? It seems to me lots of times it takes a while, even though the new rule has been in place for 3 years, whether people actually are consciously thinking about it or not, I don't know.
What we typically see is the contracting officer not terminating the contract, but retaining his or her discretion to keep the contract going.
Interesting. Okay, so let me see now. We've talked about contract type, GSA scheduled contracts, some small business issues. Well, now we have to take a break, and we've been talking to Marco Kipkipa from Shepherd Mullin, and we've been talking about mergers and acquisitions and due diligence issues, and you know, we'll continue down our checklist. When we come back, we'll be talking about novation agreements. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
From text messages to apps, games, and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at lightsquared.com.
The Federal Broadband Minute, provided by Hughes.
If your agency's communications network was tailored to your needs, what would it look like? Would your small and medium-sized field offices connect to the cloud and run applications with optimal bandwidth efficiency? Would your ideal network be cost-effective and able to leverage the benefits of GSA programs? Would it provide path-diverse communications that support COOP for the same price as your primary network service? And with your network, would you have confidence in secure connectivity, especially for teleworkers? Say yes to all these questions and meet the Government Field Office of the Future today from Hughes. With decades of experience and a comprehensive suite of solutions and partners, Hughes is able to deliver agencies a powerful national managed broadband service, providing voice, video, and data where, when, and how you need it.
To learn more, visit government.hughes.com/WFED.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment. Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates, if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Listen next week for a special edition of the Business of Government Hours Conversation with Authors series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What is open government and how has the Open Government Directive sought to change the way government does business? Join host Michael Keegan as he discusses these questions and more with Professors Guan Ho Lee and Yang Hoon Kwa, authors of the recent IBM Center Report, An Open Government Implementation Model, Moving to Increased Public Engagement, next week on the Business of Government Hours.
At Equity One, they know you are more concerned than ever about outliving your money. With all the bumps in the road through your retirement years, it's vital that you map out your retirement to protect your principal and gains, minimize taxes, keep more of your Social Security check, and enable your investments to effectively fight inflation. Call Equity One today at 1-877-313-4080. That's 1-877-313-4080, and they'll help you learn how to invest your money with market gains without market risk. If you're a saver, they'll show you how to fight inflation, preserving and increasing your purchasing power without risking your savings. As you age, you can less stand the losses and lack of liquidity in the market, as life has given us less time to recover. Equity One, Inc. looks forward to hearing from you. Call Equity One today at 877-313-4080. That's 877-313-4080. Or visit Equity, the number one, INC.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Mark Okeepa from Shepherd Mullen Richter & Hamilton LLP, and we've been talking about mergers and acquisitions and the due diligence issues that companies should think about if they're acquiring a government contractor. And, you know, Marco, we've been going through the checklist, and we're going to continue to go down this checklist. And next, and I think this is one that is really important for folks, because it really is all about the paperwork that you have to do, because there is a third party involved in these acquisitions, right? It's
yes.
The U.S. federal government. So, typically, if there's an acquisition of this type, it can involve the Anti-Assignments Act, or innovation agreements, or change in name agreements with the federal, that the federal government has to recognize, since it's their contract. First, tell us what this thing is, the Anti-Assignment Act.
Sure. The Anti-Assignment Act prohibits the transfer of a government contract to a third party. And in connection with most of the acquisitions, a novation agreement is required. And what that does is it allows the contractor to transfer the contract, but only because the government consents to the transfer.
Okay, so just let me get this straight. Now, you have the Anti-Assignment Act that says, no, you can't transfer contracts. This is, from what I recall, my youth in government contracts is that sort of actually was born out of the Civil War, right? With where,
that's correct.
Yeah, where a little history for you out there, folks, where during the Civil War you had brokers who essentially would bid on and get a contract, you know, supporting the Union Army, and then they turn around and sell that contract to a third party, and the issue was that they would just change hands and performance would never happen. And, you know, the troops couldn't get their bullets or their rifles or whatever. So the government, you know, said, hey, enough of this, and they passed this law.
That's right, yes. And that's the situation that the government still to this day seeks to prevent, is the shopping of government contracts. For instance, a contract is awarded on the basis of full and open competition. The government awards it to your company. And then the government wants to deal with your company throughout the performance of the contract. And the government wants to know that I've awarded you this contract, and if any issue should come up, it's your company that we're going to be dealing with.
Right, and you are on the line, right?
Exactly.
So the novation agreement, and that's like, I think, again, that's like FAR, Federal Acquisition Regulation, Part 42.12, subpart, I think that's
yes.
it, right?
Yeah, 1204.
Yeah, okay, see, I can remember some of these things. I haven't been out of it that long, but that's sort of, in a certain sense, it's like an exception to the Anti-Assignments Act that because through an acquisition, the government can recognize a successor in interest,
yes.
right?
Yes, the government can consent to the transfer. And there are two situations where the government or the FAR acknowledges where the transfer can occur. And it's in connection with the transfer of all of the assets of a company or all of the assets in the performance of the contract that is being transferred. And when you seek to have a contract novated, FAR Part 42.12 does set forth a detailed list of materials that must be submitted. For instance, you need to submit 3 signed copies of the proposed novation agreement, audited financial statements before and after the transaction, evidence that any security clearance requirements have been met, and essentially, it also provides a discretion that the contracting officer can request whatever documentation he or she feels necessary to effectuate the novation agreement.
Yeah, and is one of the key in that novation, that whole format, right, is right in the regulation.
That's right, yes.
And it typically, you cannot deviate from that language, typically.
Typically. Occasionally, given the circumstances, you may be able to. But given that the template appears in the FAR, our experience is that that the novation agreement should appear with as little modifications as possible.
Right, because that document, it is a, quote, agreement, and it's an agreement where the government, by this legal instrument, the novation agreement, is recognizing the successor in interest. And
yes.
The government really likes its language, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And the agreement must be signed by not only the government, but the transferor and the transferee.
Yeah.
And one thing to keep in mind in connection with the transfer of a contract, if only the assets involved in connection with performance of the contract are being transferred, the transferor is not off the hook. The actual novation agreement provides that in the event there is non-performance by the transferee, that the transferor can be held liable.
Right. And I think, you know, that's, you know, when I was a government attorney, that language was sacrosanct. You could not touch that language
yes.
at all. You could not adjust that. So that essentially there's two parties on the hook. If there's still, you know, if there's still the transfer still exists after the acquisition,
yes,
right?
You right.
know, otherwise, if they're merging into one, it's one. But if that transfer still exists and they're transferring the assets involved in performance, you're exactly right. And we would not allow any modification of that language in those situations.
Yes. And an interesting point you raise in connection with merger agreements is that the FAR specifically states that in connection with a merger or consolidation, that a novation agreement is required. Case law has been developed, and it's carved out by operation of law exception. And the case law states that where there is a merger and the party that has been performing remains the party holding the contract, that the transfer occurred by operation of law and a novation agreement is not required. Now, what we typically advise clients is that the FAR says it's required. Case law says it doesn't. You may want to check with your contracting officers to see the position they take, but if the FAR is saying that it's required, the best bet is to submit an novation package.
You know, Marco, that's very good because that operational law was on my checklist, okay? but just to continue, I do have another question about that.
Sure.
It seems to me that it's a critical issue, and that is the executing an novation agreement. You want to do it one time, right?
Yes.
And, you know, and list all the contracts in that novation agreement and pick a particular contracting officer or whichever one is doing you do the most business with is typically. Is that the way it works?
Yes. If ACO, administrative contracting officer, has been assigned to the contract, it's typically that administrative contracting officer. In a situation where there are multiple contracts, it's the contracting officer who holds the greatest unpaid balance in connection with the contracts.
Okay, so, and that's important, I think, for companies out there that they understand that they don't have to execute this agreement over and over and over again. They just need to make sure that they list in the novation agreement all the contracts that will be covered by the agreement.
Yes, and one of the fill-in-the-blanks in the novation agreement itself allows you to refer or attach an exhibit to the novation agreement where you set forth all of the contracts that are implicated by the transfer or novation. And one of the things that happens is that the government needs time in order to have all of the various contracting officers review the novation package or the information submitted in connection with the contracts. So one of the best practices is to get the contracting officer involved as early in the acquisition process as is appropriate. And this then gives them additional time to the novation package is not just dropped on them. They're aware it's going to be coming. They're aware that it has to be considered. And this also will allow you to proceed with your transaction timeline as in accordance with the deadlines that have been set.
Yeah, the better understanding you have with the CO about where things are going, what's going on, the more likely you're going to have a smooth transition.
Yeah.
And speaking of transitions, Marco, I have to interrupt because we have to take a break right now. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Marco Kipa from Shepherd Mullin Richter in Hampton, and we'll be talking about more about mergers and acquisitions. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust. It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
From text messages to apps, games, and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at lightsquared.com.
Don't miss the FPMI Human Capital Management Conference and Expo, June 13th through 16th in Tucson. After 22 years, FPMI's combined their Labor and Employee Relations Conference with their HR and EEO Conference to bring you one conference covering today's hot topics in the federal LR, ER, HR, and EEO fields. Over 70 sessions led by government leaders and industry experts. Join FPMI for 3 days of learning, networking, and exhibits. To register, visit fpmiconferences.com. That's fpmiconferences.com.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
With vacation time just around the corner, are you ready to go? Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center. And switch your existing system to Ackerman at no cost and get a great $18.95 rate. Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. You want fast response, you want Ackerman. Get 3 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or Ackerman. AckermanSecurity.com.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
OMB announced last week that 137 data centers have been shut down. 15 agencies are moving email to the cloud, and IT investment review boards are growing. 5 months after the 25-point implementation plan, great progress has been made, but there's still more to come. Join AFSEA Bethesda, DOD CIO Terry Takai, and the VA's Stephen Warren May 26th at the Bethesda North Marriott for an executive breakfast on IT management reform. To register, visit AFSEABethesda.com or call 571-323-2585.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking with Marco Kipa from Shepherd, Mullen, Richter, and Hampton. You guys must have merged a few times, right? And we've been talking about mergers and acquisitions and due diligence issues. And, you know, I'm going down my checklist, as I said, Marco. We've been going down this. And the next issue I want to talk about a little bit is the mandatory disclosure rule. And what role does that play in an acquisition? And what do you sort of, you know, advise people about with regard to that?
Well, the mandatory disclosure rule is a fairly recent regulation. It was enacted in December of 2008, and it includes two components, a suspension and debarment provision, as well as a business ethics and code of conduct provision. And what the rule essentially requires is that where the principal of the company has credible evidence of a violation of federal criminal law, essentially Title 18 violations, Civil False Claims Act violations, or significant overpayments, that the company must disclose that information to the government.
And with regard to the rule, like when you're looking at that and compliance, what do you advise, you know, your clients to do with regard to, you know, whether did they certify that they've complied with it? If you're, you know, if you're the buyer, are you saying, hey, have you complied with that or what?
Yeah, there are several things that we look at. We look at, the policies and procedures to make sure that there is a code of ethics and conduct, right, to make sure the company is complying with that. We also look to obtain a representation or warranty in the acquisition document that the company has indeed complied with it. The actual documentation here itself is particularly useful. If the company is making numerous disclosures based on credible evidence, apart from just complying with the rule, it also may raise red flags in connection with the company's operation. And this is something that should just be looked at in additional details.
Right. So do you actually get to, you know, if let's say you're acquiring somebody who's made multiple disclosures, do they disclose to you that we've made these disclosures? Obviously, but do you actually get to see what's behind that? as well?
We ask for it. There are issues involved with privilege.
Right.
But we do ask for that documentation, and to the extent the underlying facts are not privileged, we have those discussions with the appropriate personnel in the company.
Okay. Okay, and we're getting a little bit short on time, but I want to get through our complete checklist today, Marco. Okay, next issue, foreign ownership and control, foci, or foreign ownership control or influence, foci, and Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. I know there are some unique issues if you're a foreign purchaser who's going to acquire an American company doing business with particularly DOD.
Yes. Both of these foci as well as CFIUS relate to a situation where a foreign owner or foreign investor is in the mix. Foci applies to companies holding facility security clearance, and the question there is whether or not the foreign owner will be exercising control over the company. And in connection with foci, control is the key issue, and what they look at there is whether or not there is a majority or minority ownership interest, and the regulations actually provide that threshold can be as low as 5 or 10%. So it doesn't take much to get into the foci sphere, and once you're there, the Defense Security Service or your cognizant security agency could require you to implement certain mitigation plans, and those include things like board resolutions, voting trust agreements, right, proxies, as well as special security arrangements and security control agreements.
Right. So if you're a foreign purchaser, I imagine you're gonna have to look. I mean, that's a whole another level of due diligence to see if that's something even the government's gonna necessarily approve.
Right. And just as in connection with an novation agreement, where you want to get the contracting officer involved as early in the process as possible, you also want to give DSS a heads up that this is what could be coming down the road, and to get them engaged. So when they receive the pertinent materials, it's not just dropped out of their desk out of the blue.
Okay, that's anything else to add with that?
No, not in connection with foci.
Okay, yeah, we could do a whole show on that, I think, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now we've gotten through the checklist. Marco, congratulations.
Thank you.
You've completed my checklist. Now, just can you sum up? We've got a couple minutes left. Talk a bit about best practices and pointers that you'd want to give, acquirers.
Sure. I know it may sound a little cliche, but in terms of the acquisition process, you really don't want to go on this one alone. It's always best to retain government contracts counsel, as well as to have counsel in connection with all of the due diligence areas apart from the government contracting sphere.
You know, Marco, I'm not surprised that you were going to say
coming.
That. I knew that was coming. But it's true, absolutely. Actually, it's very true. It's definitely something you do not, in this world, government contracts, you do not want to be on your own.
Sure. One of the second points is that, as we've discussed, there have been significant changes in the regulatory landscape over the last several years. For instance, we discussed the new OCI rules, small business rules have changed in 2007, mandatory disclosure rules in 2008, as well as in connection with new regulations with foci as well as CFIUS.
Yeah, so you've got to be aware of those, and part of aren't you paying your attorneys for that too?
And on that point, one of the last things is that everybody in the organization should have a role in connection with the acquisition process. There is a wealth of experience and knowledge in the company, and that is something that should not be overlooked, and this should be a collaborative process as it proceeds through signing and closing.
Okay, Marco, again, you went through my checklist. You did a great job. I appreciate it. So I'm going to have to close the show, and I want to thank Marco Kiepa from Shepherd, Mullen, Richter, and Hampton for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Cisco is the official sponsor of FederalNewsRadio.com. The Cisco Center at FederalNewsRadio.com is your resource for cloud computing, data center security, and collaboration strategy and solutions.